well, regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. I know I said on Thursday that Assistant Attorney General Army Dillon would be joining us on the program today. And, you know, as soon as I said that on Thursday, I thought, don't do that. Don't jinx yourself. Well, unfortunately, the Assistant Attorney General had a something come up. Don't know what it is. We're supposed to talk later this afternoon. I'm also supposed to have a new washer delivered later this afternoon. So knock on wood that those two things don't conflict. And hopefully we'll have the head of the DOJ Civil Rights Division on Tuesdays, Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. If not, we'll have to reschedule for probably sometime after the holidays. But I have been assured that it will happen. And hopefully it'll happen this afternoon. So on today's program, we're going to be talking about the latest hit piece against the firearms industry from The Trace. Once again, in conjunction with Rolling Stone, the headline docs show how gun manufacturers swamped the market with large capacity magazines. Right. I got to say, you know, not that there's ever really any there to these stories, but this one is particularly pathetic, I guess is the word I want to use. So Mike Spees, I believe is how you pronounce his name, writes, between 1990 and 2021, the gun industry flooded the American market with at least 717 million detachable firearm magazines that hold 11 or more rounds of ammunition. According to a study produced by the gun industry's trade group, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and obtained by The Trace and Rolling Stone. Okay. 717. Now, I don't think that number is a secret. The NSSF, we've talked with Larry Keene on this program before. And, you know, the NSSF has even said in court filings, like amicus briefs, in a support of a lawsuit challenging magazine bans. They've talked about the ubiquitous nature of quote-unquote large-capacity magazines. But again, to Spees and Rolling Stone and, of course, The Trace, this is evidence of something nefarious, right? Not all manufacturers of gun magazines provided data to the NSSF, the study stipulates, so that its figures represent a, quote, conservative estimate. In addition, military and law enforcement sales were not counted. The study, begun in 2023, says that roughly 46% of the magazines it accounted for, some 441 million, were rifle magazines that held 30 rounds or more. Okay. So, I mean, again, in common use, right? Now, Spees argues that from 1994 to 2004, large capacity magazines were prohibited under the federal assault ban. But he writes, still according to an NSSF spreadsheet that underpins the study and was obtained through a public records request, production and distribution of these magazines continued. This was due at least in part to, quote, loopholes and exemptions. During the ban, hundreds of thousands of pistol large-capacity magazines were produced and entered the market each year, as were millions of rifle magazines that held 30 rounds or more. Okay. So even during the 10-year period in which these things were banned, right, these magazines were being produced. But Spees writes, since the ban's lapse, the gun industry has sought to normalize large-capacity magazines, pumping huge numbers of them into the civilian market. The spreadsheet shows that production and distribution of magazines holding 30 or more rounds skyrocketed starting in 2010, reaching 23 million, almost tripling the previous year's number. Okay. So, why? Why did the firearms industry want to normalize large-capacity magazines? Why did they want to flood the market with large-capacity magazines? What's the benefit to the firearms industry? I mean, frankly, if you have magazines that can hold no more than 10 rounds, you're probably going to sell more magazines, right? Than if you sell magazines that can hold 17 rounds or 20 rounds or 30 rounds. I mean, doesn't the firearms industry, if it's all about the money, seems to me like they'd have a vested interest in backing bans on quote-unquote large-capacity magazines. So, I, and by the way, Spees never really does explain, like, why this would be in the industry's best interest, as opposed to the industry responding to customer demand, right? They say, or Spies writes, the NSSF study titled the Detachable Magazine Report. Oh my gosh, what a scary title. And the spreadsheet provides an insider's view into the breadth of the industry's efforts to use large capacity magazines, in particular, those holding more than 30 rounds, to turn a profit. I mean, again, wouldn't it be more profitable to sell more 10-round magazines than 30-round magazines? And from a profit standpoint, again, if you ban quote-unquote large-capacity magazines, aren't you going to sell more quote-unquote regular-capacity magazines? I don't get the supposed profit motive here. Spisa adds, production and distribution largely continued to jump each year after 2010, peaking in 2018, the year of the Parkland mass shooting, at 37.4 million magazines. Okay. So the ban expired in 2004, right? 2010, and I'm just trying to use Spies' reasoning here. So 6 years after the ban expires, the firearms industry suddenly realized, holy moly, my God, we're missing out on this incredible profit here. Why? Well, let's just triple the number of large capacity magazines we're selling. And we'll just continue to ramp it up and ha-ha, more money in our pockets. Why'd they wait 6 years? If it was all about the money. And if demand, or excuse me, if production kept ramping up after 2010, does that not indicate that there was demand for these products? Now, Spies and the Trace, of course, have a vested interest in demonizing and denormalizing large capacity magazines, or quote unquote large capacity magazines, right? Spies notes that there was a study done that showed, I think it was like something like 60% of mass shootings since 1982, quote unquote, large capacity magazines were used, as opposed to, Spies says, the infinitesimally small number of defensive gun uses involving the need to fire more than 10 rounds. He writes, the NSF's claim, according to research by economist Lucy Allen, that, again, large capacity magazines are useful for self-defense, lacks empirical support, he writes. For litigation, she and a team, yeah, for litigation. For litigation, defending California's magazine ban, which something, a little detail that Spies doesn't provide there. For litigation, she and a team working on behalf of California General Attorney General Rob Bonta analyzed 736 incidents between January 2011 and May of 2017 in which the National Rifle Association documented a person using a firearm for self-defense. So 736 incidents over a six-year period of time. Even Everytown for Gun Safety says there are about 69,000 defensive gun uses every year. Every year, right? So if there are roughly, I'm just going to round up, if there are roughly 70,000, again, that's a really low number, by the way. Most estimates are north of 100,000 defensive gun uses every year. But let's use Everytown's number, although I will round up to 70,000. Over a six-year period of time, you're talking about some 420,000 defensive gun uses. You look at 736 incidents that were covered by the NRA's American Rifleman magazine, meaning that they receive substantial, at least local news coverage, right? Well, what about the other 419,300 some odd cases? What about those? I'm not sure that Allen's very limited collection of defensive gun uses really tells us all that much. But anyway, Allen says this is the largest collection of accounts of citizen self-defense compiled by others that she was able to find. Okay. Her analysis found that the people in the database fired 2.2 shots on average. And out of the 736 total incidents, only two involved a person reportedly firing more than 10 bullets. That 2.2 rounds figure was cited extensively by the state of California. It's actually been used in other lawsuits defending other magazine bans as well. It's become a favorite stat of the gun control lobby. I think it was Lawrence Van Dyke, judge in the Ninth Circuit, who in Duncan versus Bonta, when the Ninth Circuit actually struck down that law, before it was, their decision was reversed by an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit. And that three-judge panel, though, struck down California's magazine ban. Van Dyke, and I think it was Van Dyke, really took issue with this particular quote-unquote study by Allen. And noted that, you know, if you want to be technical about it, research agrees that the vast majority of defensive gun uses don't involve the pull of a trigger at all. So, if, and now keep in mind, the Ninth Circuit ultimately concluded that magazines aren't arms protected by the Second Amendment anyway. So, according to the Ninth Circuit, California could ban all detachable magazines tomorrow and not violate anybody's Second Amendment rights. But, at the very least, right, if the average number of rounds fired in a defensive gun use 2.2. Wow, I mean, a 5-round magazine limit, that's more than enough, right? But again, if you want to factor in all defensive gun uses, the average number of rounds fired is much closer to zero. So, can you just ban all magazines? Can you turn require firearms to be a single shot? Firearms? I mean, again, according to the Ninth Circuit, absolutely you can. There's no conflict with the Second Amendment whatsoever because arms are not protected by the Second Amendment. A contention, by the way, that Lawrence Van Dyke very much disagrees with. He had that video response to the Ninth Circuit en banc decision, you remember, in which he kind of went through the mechanics of a firearm, pointing out that a magazine is an inherent part of a firearm that is needed for that firearm to function as intended. But again, that's not what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has formally concluded. No, according to that court, again, ban away. There's no limitation on magazine capacity that would violate the Second Amendment, according to the Ninth Circuit. Duncan versus Bonta, by the way, is before the Supreme Court right now. It's been heard in conference at least once, along with Gators Custom Guns, which is a challenge to Washington State's ban on quote-unquote large capacity magazines, and Viramontes versus Cook County, which is a challenge to Cook County, Illinois' ban on so-called assault weapons. The Supreme Court has not taken any action on those cases. I think they discussed them at least on the December 12th conference, but I don't think they've been relisted since then. Of course, the court is through with conferences for the year. The next one takes place January the 9th. So those cases may get relisted. The court may decide to hang on to these cases. Maybe until, you know, Wolford versus Lopez is decided, maybe until Hamani's versus decided, or maybe until the Third Circuit Court of Appeals delivers its opinion on New Jersey's ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines, which is expected to create a circuit court split. And maybe the Supreme Court then grants cert to the New Jersey cases, keeps the other cases in abeyance until after the New Jersey case has been resolved. We don't really know yet. But for whatever reason, the court hasn't rejected the cert petitions for Duncan versus Bonta, Gators Custom Guns, and Viramontes. But they haven't accepted them either. It's sort of in this legal holding pattern. So we'll hear these arguments if and when a magazine ban case is accepted by the Supreme Court. And again, according to Justice Brett Kavanaugh last term, it should happen within a term or two, which, you know, hopefully means that a case being heard by SCOTUS is imminent here. But when and if the court does take up a magazine ban case, you're going to hear a lot of these arguments that Spies presents in the pages of Rolling Stone, that the firearms industry has, you know, flooded the market with large capacity magazines. Purely out of, again, this profit motive, this weird profit motive where you make more money by selling larger magazines so that people have to buy fewer magazines. I don't get it. We will hear a lot about that 2.2 rounds fired in an average defensive gun use statistic. As flawed as that study was, it will be cited ad nauseum by gun control supporters. And again, you know, groups like the Trace, anti-gun politicians like California Attorney General Rob Bonta, will do their best to demonize not just the companies that manufacture these magazines, but the gun owners who want them, right? Now, let's go back to the numbers for just a second. 717 million magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds produced, what, since 2016, I think it was, they said? Maybe since 2010? Okay, that's a lot of magazines, right? So if, in fact, magazines are arms protected by the Second Amendment, then quote-unquote large-capacity magazines are in common use. But more importantly, we don't have anywhere close to 714 million violent crimes committed with a firearm every year, right? Not even close. So the vast majority, like 99% of the people who own quote-unquote large-capacity magazines in this country pose no problem by possessing those magazines, right? So these are, again, in common use for a variety of lawful purposes because they're used far more often for lawful purposes than they are in violent crimes. So why wouldn't they be protected by the Second Amendment? Again, unless you play these, you know, logistical gymnastics in deciding that a part of a firearm that is necessary for it to function as intended is really not a part of a firearm at all. It's just an accessory. That's really the only way that you can, you know, rule that bans on these magazines are constitutional. And that is the road that the Ninth Circuit has taken. But it is a road that, again, if taken to its logical conclusion, means that every magazine, large capacity or not, every magazine in this country could be prohibited. Also raises the question about, now, we're talking about external magazines anyway, right? But it also raises the question, like, if an external magazine is supposedly not necessary for a firearm to function, then is an internal magazine, is a fixed magazine really necessary for a firearm to function too? Or could fixed magazines also be prohibited? And again, every firearm turned into a single shot firearm. I don't see anything in the Ninth Circuit's opinion in Duncan that would suggest otherwise. And that poses, again, a huge problem for gun owners around the country if the Supreme Court lets Duncan stand. We've talked before about what it would mean for California gun owners, right? Because California's magazine ban was revised a few years ago, and the grandfather clause that allowed people who had lawfully purchased quote-unquote large-capacity magazines to maintain possession of those magazines while new purchases were banned. That was scrapped, and existing owners were told, you've either got to permanently modify your magazine so it can't hold more than 10 rounds, you've got to destroy your magazine, got to hand it over to law enforcement, or you got to get it out of the state of California. That portion of the law has been on hold, even while the previous language of the law that included that grandfather clause, that's been enforced. So you haven't been able to purchase any new large capacity magazines, but people who did buy them legally have been able to keep a hold of them. Well, if the Supreme Court doesn't grant cert in Duncan, if it denies cert outright, then California can start enforcing the entirety of its magazine ban. And I would say, by the way, it won't be long until some anti-gun Democrat in California says, probably not right away, we're going to get rid of magazines altogether. I even in California, that I think would be a bridge too far, at least for the moment. But it won't be long before you see some anti-gun politician say 10 rounds is too many. 5 rounds is enough. revolvers, you know, typically hold six rounds, or a six-round magazine capacity, right? Who needs more than a half a dozen rounds to defend yourself or to shoot a deer, as former Vice President Biden liked to say. It's not going to stop at 10. 10's an arbitrary number anyway, so why would we expect it to stop there? But Rolling Stone and The Trace, again, doing its damnedest to make the demand for magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds look as nefarious as possible, portraying it again as a cram down from the firearms industry instead of what I suspect it really was, which was an increase in production in response to, again, demand by customers. See, if you talk about that, though, then you get into the really sticky problem about, you know, millions of tens of millions of Americans exercising their Second Amendment rights. And, you know, the Trace, I think they have, and the gun control lobby in general, has taken the position that, you know, it's fine to bash like Second Amendment activists, right? But we really don't want to go after gun owners in general. Let's talk more about the firearms industry. Gun owners will talk about how gun owners support these common sense gun measures, right? They don't really want to portray all gun owners as the problem because they're still trying to build inroads among gun owners. So, yeah, much more likely to blame gun industry CEOs, as Giffords has done repeatedly, and then again with, you know, the Trace, funded by Everytime for Gun Safety, claiming that firearm manufacturers, you know, flooded the market with large capacity magazines just so they could make more money. Greedy so-and-sos. All right. Now that we have thoroughly debunked that story, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Baltimore. Baltimore man arrested in connection to homicide has long and troubling criminal past. And it is actually a long and troubling criminal past, particularly for a 22-year-old, Devin Shady, Shadell. He's been arrested for assault in connection with the death of 19-year-old Devon Smallwood, who was killed earlier this month, December the 10th. Police have not officially identified Shadell as the shooter. Police are not ruling out his potential involvement, though, in the murder of another individual, 14-year-old Michael Hitchens, who was killed 3 days later. Same place, Washington Boulevard there in Baltimore. Now, according to Fox 45 in Baltimore, Shadell has a history of violent crime, at least being accused of violent crime, including a 2022 murder charge that was filed when he was 17. This past June, he was also arrested after several people told police that he was firing a gun at people on the same corner where the two homicides took place. Charging documents filed the same day report that he threatened to shoot and kill his ex-girlfriend's mother after trashing her home. Since then, since June, so over the past 6 months, Shadell has been arrested 13 times. In 6 months, charges ranging from handgun offenses to attempted robbery, another attempted murder. Okay, I'm sorry. I guess Fox 45, their syntax was a little garbled, but this was from June of 2024. So 18 months, excuse me. 13 arrests over the past 18 months. And again, legal possession of a handgun, attempted robbery, another attempted murder charge from June of 2024. Fox 45 spoke with Betsy Smith, who is the spokesperson for the National Police Association, who highlighted the issue of repeat offenders. She said, for people under the age of 18 who are arrested one time, generally speaking, they're going to get rearrested again and again and again. Shadell's previous attempted murder charge dismissed this past April because witnesses were uncooperative. They didn't want to testify. Betsy Smith says individuals like these, like Mr. Shadell, these individuals with, again, who keep getting arrested time and time again, don't just need to be arrested. They need to be punished. And that is true. You know, again, when witnesses refuse to cooperate, it makes things very difficult for prosecutors. That is undeniable. But that was one of 13 cases since June of 2024, right? So even if you can't get Shadell on attempted murder, aren't there lesser charges? Are any of these cases moving forward? What's going on here? And again, when you've got a 22-year-old who's been arrested almost monthly for the past year and a half on serious offenses, can we start talking about Maryland's soft on crime policies, particularly when it comes to bond? You know, we've talked before about the broken juvenile justice system in Maryland, and lawmakers have actually started to pay attention to that. But I'd say the criminal justice system for adults is also in need of some serious reform, and not to go easier on those accused of violent offenses, which has been the norm in Maryland for the past several years. On to today's armed citizen story from Memphis, Tennessee, where a burglary suspect who reportedly was armed with an axe was shot outside of the home that he was trying to get into. This was Friday night, midnight on Friday. Memphis police responded to a report of a burglary. According to a report from the Memphis police, caller told dispatch that a man had been using an axe to break into the home. The caller reportedly said that they, quote, had him on the ground. When officers arrived, they reportedly found the suspect lying there on the ground with an axe next to him. When officers asked the suspect about his injuries, he told the officers, I must have tripped and fallen on my axe. Okay. Suspect was taken to a local hospital listed in critical condition. According to the Memphis police, it was only then that it was determined that the suspect had actually been shot. Memphis police say they couldn't tell how many times the suspect had been shot because of how heavily his wounds were bleeding. According to Memphis police, the victim told officers he was sitting in his car, had his fiance with him. They're in the driveway. When he saw the suspects hitting the front door of his home, again with an axe, victim told officers that the guy ran away when he approached him. And the victim also claimed that the suspect must have been injured by tripping and falling on his axe. Memphis police report that officers spoke to a woman who was inside the home at the time of the incident. She reportedly told officers she heard loud banging and glass shattering. She feared for her life. Memphis police say the woman's husband, her son, three of her grandchildren were also inside the home. Apparently, everybody was detained after police learned that the suspect had been shot. One person stayed with the kids in the home, while others were taken in for further questioning. At this point, the Memphis police did not release the name of the suspect or said if any charges have been filed in this case. I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that there might be a problem, not in terms of the self-defense aspect of this story. There might be a problem with the gun ownership aspect of this story, right? It might be that the individual who fired at the guy who was trying to break down the door with the axe was not legally allowed to have a firearm. I'm not saying that's the case for sure, but it seems to me like when you got something that, a guy trying to break into a home, he's got an axe, he gets shot, he doesn't admit he got shot, nobody in the house admits he got shot. Occam's razor suggests that maybe there's a problem with the person who shot that would-be home invader possessing a firearm at the time. But we'll keep our eyes open for any more details out of the Memphis area. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Some of my neighbors in Harford County, Maryland, who saved two seniors from a house fire that had been sparked by a discarded cigarette. You gotta put those things out. I mean, that's just pretty simple. This was a late Saturday afternoon in Abingdon, Maryland. Deputy State Fire Marshal say the blaze started around 4:15 Saturday afternoon in the garage of a two-story home. Again, apparently somebody, pitched a cigarette butt, didn't make sure that it was out. And the house is essentially gone now. Took about half an hour to contain the fire. Crews were able to prevent it from spreading to the neighboring property, but there were about 50 firefighters that ended up working this blaze. No injuries reported, thankfully. But about $300,000 in structural damage, $200,000 in stuff inside the home that was destroyed. And again, this could have been worse were it not for the fact that neighbors saw smoke, ran up to the door, alerted the individuals who were inside. Your house is on fire. You need to get out right now. These individuals are described as seniors. Don't know how old they were. But they had, apparently had no idea that this house was on fire. Investigators say they ruled out early reports of the vehicle or a battery charger for a car inside the garage that caused the fire. Again, looks like it was just something that human error, I guess you got to call it, but something that could have been avoided. The homeowner is being assisted by family, friends, as well as the Harford County Disaster Assistance Organization, but in the right place at the right time, willing able to help their neighbors in need. The anonymous Good Samaritans there in Abingdon, Maryland, who knocked on the door, helped save a couple of lives there on Saturday afternoon. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, and I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I am looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow, where, fingers crossed, we'll be talking with Assistant Attorney General Harmy Dillon, head of the DOJ Civil Rights Division and the new Second Amendment section. But if not, I have a backup plan. I'm not going to jinx it, though. I'm not going to say anything about it. Just I'll let you know. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. Today, though, we are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation and beyond. We're looking at what's going on in Canada. We're looking at what's going on in Australia. There's a lot of gun control news to talk about internationally as well. And if you like what you see, I would let you know we've got a special deal going on right now, sort of an early Christmas present for folks. If you use the promo code MERRY74, M-E-R-R-Y 74, you can take 74% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership when you sign up. It is a great way to get some savings. Frankly, it makes a great Christmas gift if you're still looking for a Christmas gift for your loved ones. Just again, use that code MERRY74. And get 74% off your membership. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.